Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first stepfather, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome to Why All Girls Need a Pink Disco Ball, the podcast where you and I become our best selves together. Hello, it is your host and friend, Ava here. I am so happy you are here. I can't even contain it. You do realize that you picked the perfect episode to show up for, right? No doubt, this is the most important episode I've ever done and will ever do, because this is the golden ticket, the literal golden ticket to well-being, to health, to happiness, all right here. Like, if you could take all the advice that the professionals are throwing at you constantly on social media that we're all getting so overwhelmed with, like, you know, the health hacks and take this vitamin and take this prescription, don't do this, do this. But if you could just take all of that and strip it down to the essentials, that is what this episode is. In other words, if you could listen to just one podcast for your health and well-being, it is this one right here. So yeah, that's why you got to take a minute right now and seriously thank yourself for taking the time to be here, because this is the most wonderful act of kindness and self-love you could possibly give yourself. Because let me tell you, especially after this episode, you will not be the same. This is where change happens and where you will become the person you've been waiting to meet. I see it. I see it happening for you, and I'm so honored to be doing that with you. But listen, I'm here talking all this talk about becoming your best self, but I gotta be so honest. Sometimes I don't feel like my best self. And I gotta open up about it because I know I'm not alone. I sometimes just don't feel right, mentally and physically. And I am so sick of feeling like this. Here's one example. Sometimes I'm so tired and drained during the days, even when I get good sleep. Like last week, I was driving home from my grandparents' house in the middle of the day, and I was basically falling asleep at the wheel, and I just couldn't help but be like, what is this? Another one of my problems, I get really bad brain fog, either at work or when I'm working on these very scripts, and it is unbelievably frustrating and waste so much time because I just can't freaking use my brain. And another one, oh my god, this is bad. I'm way too easily distracted all the time, and this is how bad it is. Just this morning, I was writing thank you cards to family members. I know, kind of old-fashioned, and I had to reach for my phone out of instinct after I wrote only one sentence on the card. Oh my god, that's bad. Let me just replay the scenario for you. So I was writing, I was sitting there writing, and I was like, dear Uncle Bill, thank you so much for the gift. Reaches for the phone. That's literally how it went. Oh my God. My attention span, out the window. It doesn't even exist anymore. If I keep this up, it's gonna be like, dear Uncle Bill, gets bored and then reaches for phone. That is how bad it's getting. I'm so ashamed. Another one, I am tense, like my body is tense all the time, especially the muscles in my face. Apparently, my eyebrows are always creased together because I'm already starting to see a wrinkle in between my eyebrows, and I'm only 20 freaking 1 years old. And the reason why I'm so tense is because my body is anxious for no reason. Like, I sit there and my heart is beating fast, I'm fidgety. Then on the other side, sometimes I'm so miserable and joyless that it takes me an hour to get out of bed in the morning. Maybe sometimes more. Ugh. Saying this out loud is so humbling, but I'm not gonna lie, and there's no judgment on this podcast. I don't judge you and you don't judge me. So what's worse about this whole thing is that some of these things I have been feeling and doing for years. To a certain extent, some of those things are completely normal to me. But I am here to say that I have finally woken up and I finally realized this is not normal at all. The human body is not meant to feel like this on a regular basis. But do you want to know why it took me so long to realize this? Because so many people around me say the exact same thing, and I've compared myself to people who experience it worse than me, where they're more anxious than me, more depressed, more tired, more easily distracted than me. I will say, it's amazing that we got to the point where we're able to express how we feel and to really open up about what we're dealing with, but I wish I could hold your hand when I say this. It doesn't make it normal to feel. It doesn't. It's not normal to be so anxious for no reason and to be so easily distracted or miserable or depressed all the time for no reason. It's just, it's not. At this point, we know that there's a whole set of biological and chemical processes happening in the brain behind every mental disorder that's making us feel these things, right? Obviously, we can't control that in the moment. But have you ever asked yourself why those processes are happening in the first place? What is causing your brain to not be releasing enough serotonin or dopamine or glutamate or too much cortisol? When we feel off like that, our bodies are trying to tell us that we're doing something wrong. We've gotten so used to being like, oh, I'm feeling anxious every day. I've been getting headaches more days out of the week than not. Let me take a pill to fix it. But we never address the root of why it's even happening in the first place. Like, this whole time, my body has been like, hello, help, something is wrong here, can you please help me? I am finally listening because I don't deserve to feel like that. I am sick of it, and you don't deserve to feel like that. I want you to feel freaking amazing, energized, happy, unstoppable, loved, capable. And guess what? It is possible. No matter what prescription you take, if it's been genetically passed down to you, if you've been dealing with it for years and think you're stuck with feeling this way forever. Yeah, let out a big breath of relief. Untense those shoulders and say hello to your new life. Now, here's the point I've been trying to get at. There are basic things we're wired as human beings to do. 6 things to be exact. but we're not doing them. And in most cases, it's the result to why you're not getting enough dopamine, to why there's too much cortisol, to why you're so tired. Turns out the answer to most of our problems doesn't have to be a prescription, a freaking healing trip to Thailand, or $1 million. And spoiler alert, they're actually nothing you haven't heard before. We all know these things. I'll list them in a second, but I need to tell you where I learned these six necessities in the first place. So we know that I majored in psychology at Penn State because I want to be a therapist. One of my last classes before I graduated was a class called clinical psychology. And in this class, it was basically an introduction of how to be a therapist. I learned some of the core principles of how to be a really good therapist in this class. And the professor who taught it is one of the most intelligent people I've ever met in my life. I admire her so much from afar. She has her doctorate in mental health counseling. She has been a therapist for about 20 years and is one of the best counselors in the area. Also, her class was so interesting that it was the only class I've ever taken at Penn State where I made sure to be there every single class because it was that enjoyable and informative. And I didn't even have to be there. Like, she rarely took attendance, so it was pretty much optional to show up. But still, most students showed up to this class because she was so brilliant. So one day, I walked into her class, and written on the chalkboard in white chalk was the necessities to stable mental health. And it was numbered 1 through 6. So I knew, okay, we're gonna be learning 6 absolutely crucial things that keep our brain and mental health strong. AKA, it keeps us happy, it keeps us sharp, focused, and healthy. So the class starts, she starts talking, and she says something along the lines of, there are 6...
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Basic necessities for mental health. This is where you start the treatment plan with a client, always. You have to make sure your clients are doing these 6 things if they want to get better, because these necessities are the core to strong brain function. If you're not doing these things, it's most likely why you're feeling so shitty for no reason. And then she said something that, absolutely blew my mind. I still think about this every single day. She estimated that about 95 to 97% of all mental disorders in the DSM do not need medication to be cured. Just let that sink in for a second. To reduce the symptoms, most of the time, all that is needed is major lifestyle changes. And these lifestyle changes all come back to these 6 basic necessities that I'm going to talk about today. Now, I have to throw this out there because I'm terrified if I don't. Please don't sue me. These 6 necessities may not be a cure for everyone. Everybody is different, so some disorders might need a little bit of medication along with these major lifestyle changes, especially like the more severe ones. For disorders that have genetically been passed down, these necessities will significantly reduce the symptoms, but once again, may not be a total cure for everyone. Some people might need to make more intense lifestyle changes, some not as intense, but overall, you will, keyword, will significantly reduce your symptoms, no matter what you got, where you got it, how bad it is. There is a way around most brain disorders, and you're going to hear me talk about it all in this episode. I'm sorry, I'm gonna cut the crap now. Here are the six necessities, the six basic necessities to stable mental health. Number one, exercise. Number two, proper nutrition. Three, social support. Four, proper sleep. Five, engaging in the default mode network, which is a way to rest your brain by letting it daydream and reflect. And six, religion or spirituality. Like I said, we've all heard these, but I guarantee not in the perspective that you're about to hear them in this episode. Because if you did, then you would already be doing these things for your brain health. We cannot be screwing around with our health anymore, with our brain health. We forget to make the connection that when our brain is healthy, that's what carries us through a date. It's what makes people fall in love with you. It can strategize your next business idea that can completely change your life. It helps you cope with life's problems so you don't get dragged down. That's why we need to prioritize these six things. Please keep in mind, I learned these six necessities 5 months ago, so I've really sat with these for a long time. I've researched them, I've added on to them, and also throughout these 5 months, I've listened to so many lifestyle and self-help podcasts. I love them. I love the Mel Robbins podcast, the Jay Shetty podcast, the Diary of a CEO. That's my stuff right there, because I'm always trying to learn ways to improve health and well-being, and these podcasts bring on the best doctors, the best researchers, psychologists, psychiatrists, lifestyle coaches, the best of the best in the whole world. And in every single episode that I have listened to, when they talk about their research, trying to understand why humans are facing so many of the mental challenges and blocks that you and I have been facing, it all stems down to either one of these six necessities. Every single episode I have listened to comes down to a disruption in at least one of the necessities that we're going to talk about today. So it's not just me and my professor who is saying you need to prioritize these things. It is the top doctors and researchers in the whole world who are telling you to prioritize these things as well. And I just need to say, possibly the most important thing here, if you're one of the people who are listening to this and you're like, yeah, okay, it sounds possible for someone else, but it's not possible for me. We don't believe that. I'm sorry. We don't believe anything like that in this space. I choose to believe that you can live the life you want, overcome any internal challenge. I'm sorry. I refuse to believe anything other than that. You can do literally anything. But I do want to take a little breather before we continue because, like always, I have this week's brain booster, my latest love, and a little reminder for you. My friend actually said the funniest thing about the brain boosters, though. I gotta share this. So we were on the phone and she was like, Ava, I love the brain booster part of your podcast because I get to sound so smart in front of my friends when I take the brain booster fact and then randomly share it with them as if I did my own research on it. I cracked up when I heard that. I think that is so funny. And she was also like, it's a great conversation starter. If the conversation gets boring, she gets to be like, did you know? Then shares the random fact, which I didn't even think about when I made that. But yeah, I guess there's no limit to what you choose to do with these facts. And You know, that's what I love about them. So do what you will with the Brain Boosters. With that being said, this is the Brain Booster for this week. Scientists found a way that significantly lowers your risk of getting Alzheimer's disease, and that is by learning new things. Yay! To explain it in super simple terms, when you learn new things, your brain builds extra, like, back roads, if you will. So when Alzheimer's blocks the main road, your brain can still find another way to work through the back roads. If you think about it, I think why Alzheimer's probably got so bad in the first place is because everybody thought to stop learning once they graduated college or high school. But our brain needs the challenge. So thank God there are like a million things to learn out there. Guess what I learned how to do? I learned how to juggle. I've been so annoying to my friends because I keep sending them videos of me just standing in the corner of my room juggling three balls like all day long. I've gotten pretty good at it though, not gonna lie. But yeah, that's what I learned how to do to keep my brain healthy. You could pick up an instrument. The internet actually says there's 1,500 instruments all around the world, so you could pick from that. You know, everyone throws it out there to learn a new language, but that's actually perfect. Learn a new language. Do new puzzles and games. There's art, dance. There is so much to learn to prevent yourself from getting Alzheimer's. So next up, my latest love. Remember, while I share mine, it's your job to think about your latest love. While you're thinking about that, my latest love this week is my freaking girl, Lady Gaga. I love her so much. I'm literally being her for Halloween in a few months. I don't know if you've seen the Lady Gaga costume on TikTok, but you basically dress up as her in her poker face era with the really long whitish blondish hair with the bangs and then the black bedazzled sunglasses and the little lightning bolt over the eye. Oh my God. Look out for my freaking TikToks because I'm going hard for Halloween this year. And okay, just to clarify here, when I say I love Lady Gaga, I mean I love like I love her new music, but my obsession is basically her album, The Fame, because I literally pulled it up on my phone right now. That album has, you know, like Poker Face, the freaking, what song is more iconic than that? I Will Wait. I Will Wait Forever. There is no song that is more iconic than that. So there's Poker Face, you know, Paparazzi. I love that stuff. I also am obsessed with The Fame Monster because her other songs that I am completely obsessed with are on that one. Let me tell you some underrated ones though. Please, you will not be disappointed. You listen to this right now. Speechless by Lady Gaga. That is so underrated. I'm telling you, you won't be disappointed. I'm also obsessed with So Happy I Could Die. Oh my God, I love that song so much. But my new one, like if you were to ask me today, Eva, like what's your favorite song today? It would be Dance in the Dark. By the way, Dance in the Dark is not the new song from Wednesday that she just made. Like, I think it's like the dead dance or something like that. Because when I told my sister that my new favorite Lady Gaga song was Dance in the Dark, she thought I meant the song from Wednesday. And I was like, no, it is not that. It is not that. But I'm telling you, you will not be disappointed. But I don't just love her because of the music.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
I also find her so inspiring. I look up to her the most because she never gave up. Did you know that she was bullied in high school and was rejected so many times when she was first trying to make music? But she literally did not care. She was 18 years old and was straight up saying, watch me, I'm going to be the next freaking superstar. And no one believed it. They all laughed. Yeah, but she will always be my favorite, and I cannot wait to be her for Halloween. And speaking of Halloween, because it ties in with your reminder for the week, the reminder that I want to give you is to start getting ready for the fall season. Obviously, the decorating and the fall stuff, but also the season is changing and it's time to change with it. So if you've been meaning to make a change in your life, or if you're unhappy with something, now is the time to do it. Me personally, I'm planning to change my room. I have been meaning to redecorate it and make it more like me. I've been putting it off for so long, but now I'm like, okay, now's my time to do it so I can start the season off with a new beginning. But also, I can't wait for the fall stuff. I want to learn how to make pumpkin bread or pumpkin cupcakes or something like that. I already got the apple cider candles all over the house, so it smells like fall over here. And I have also been itching to watch Coraline so bad, but I've been trying to put that off a little bit because it is only like September 9th right now. So I think I might wait until October 1st hits and then I'll watch Coraline. But yeah, I'm really going out for fall this year. Now we're going to take just a quick break, few seconds, but right after, we're getting into the 6 basic necessities that you absolutely need for strong brain health. And I'm gonna take my time explaining each one so you can really get the most out of them all. We're not messing around on each of these 6 things. You don't have to feel so shitty anymore, physically and emotionally. We're becoming our best selves together this episode. I'll see you right after the break. Let's talk about exercise. Now, I'm not here to give you the same shit we all know. Exercise boosts serotonin and dopamine. It's super important, yada, yada, yada. I am here with the serious stuff, okay? If what I'm about to tell you does not show you how crucial exercise is for our mental health, I don't know what will. But listen to this. My professor said that exercise is the first thing she recommends to her patients with a mental disorder. And most of the time, she recommends it over medication. When I heard that, it felt like my whole entire perception of mental health and well-being completely changed. I was like, what do you mean? There's just no way. But it's because the specific hormones that get released during exercise directly help symptoms of not only anxiety and depression, but brain disorders I never thought would be linked, like schizophrenia, bipolar, ADHD. Hello, it's a natural medicine for brain disorders. Now, I'm not saying that exercise will completely take away the symptoms, but the wonderful thing about it is that it only helps you. There are no downsides to exercise. So, I hate to break it to you, but you gotta exercise if you want to be healthy and stay mentally and physically healthy. I think why a lot of people don't exercise in the first place is because we think it doesn't apply to us because we don't want to lose weight. Or we've been associating exercise with only obese people having to do. Growing up, I never once thought to exercise because I always liked my body enough. I was always like, oh, I don't need to do that. That could not be more false. The body that you and I are in right now is designed for movement. It is designed for exercise. And let me tell you what our bodies are not designed for. We are not designed to be living the life that we live now, where we sit at a desk all day long working, then get tired from that and rot in bed for hours on social media or watching TV. The top doctors and professionals that I keep up to date with all say that being sedentary is a disease, aka spending too much time being seated is a disease, and it is slowly killing us. This is what the statistics say if you don't exercise. You are nearly twice as likely to suffer from depression and 60% more likely to experience anxiety compared to people who do exercise. And here's something really interesting. Exercise actually grows your brain. There's this protein called BDNF that not only physically grows your brain, but it creates new neurons so we can mentally grow and learn. But when you don't exercise, your brain barely releases this protein, so your brain gets stuck at the level that it's at. That's probably why you've met so many immature adults who you just swear could be a child trapped in an adult's body, and you've sat there thinking to yourself, how is this even possible? Well, it's possible because their brain probably didn't grow. We can't let it get to this point because that means we are completely incapable of recovering from trauma or stress. The first step to getting yourself out of a mental funk is to exercise so you can grow your brain so it has the tools it needs to recover. I'm not going to get too in-depth with this one because it doesn't have much to do with mental health, but it's really interesting. Longevity experts and the top anti-aging doctors, because I guess they have those now, are saying that if you consistently exercise throughout your life, it reverses the aging process in your cells, so it prevents you from aging. That is literally remarkable. Imagine being able to add 10 to 15 solid years to your life. And good years too, without, you know, the walking canes and the wheelchairs and the million prescriptions to keep you from getting a heart attack. Exercising will prevent all of that from happening for many extra years of your life. Now, here's the answer to the question you're probably asking yourself right now. You only need to exercise 30 minutes a day, 5 times a week, to have all these wonderful, amazing, perfect effects. And before you start freaking out about the 30 minutes a day, 5 times a week thing, let me explain because it's really not as bad as you think. I feel like the word exercise can be so intimidating. Like, I don't even blame the people listening to this and they're like, ugh, just from hearing the word. We think it's a whole process where we have to go to the gym and spend money on plans, weightlift like the bodybuilders and the fancy equipment. But there are so many other ways to get in that 30 minutes of exercise in a day because all you have to do is raise your heart rate just a little bit over a steady period of time. Like, walking is perfect. People don't realize that that is exercise. If you have a break at work, take a 15-minute walk to sharpen up your brain and boom, you already knocked off half of the required exercise time for the day. Ask a friend to go on a walk in the park or in the neighborhood. You get to hang out with a friend, enjoy the beautiful nature, and get your heart rate up a bit. And even better, 10 minutes into that walk, you'll start feeling so much better already. You'll feel more energized. You'll feel more love and connected to your friend. Your brain will be fired up, so you'll have more things to talk about. And even more awesome, all this while you'll be feeling so proud of yourself for getting up to do it. Oh my gosh. Also, dancing is so underrated. I'm not joking. Put on a few Just Dance videos on YouTube that you and your whole family can do together. Have fun with it. You can take turns and even better, record yourselves doing it so then you can watch it back when you're done and laugh at how stupid you look. Low key, is that not such a good date idea? Are you kidding? I am so into that. And Let me tell you what I feel like would happen if you do that with your partner. I am kind of convinced that they will fall in love with you because just think about it. Dancing releases so many happy chemicals in their brain. You'll be getting them to feel so pumped up and so happy to the point they won't even know why they feel so good and happy in that moment. So they're gonna think it's you that's making them feel so good. First of all, I really hope I'm not the only one who thinks that is such a good idea, because I think that's good. I think that's a cute date idea. And second of all, oh my God. Guys, on this podcast, we psychologically get in people's heads and trick them into falling in love with us. Hello, that's just how we do.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Things around here. Okay, I'm joking. Anyways, to keep going, another great idea to exercise is to just look up those free Pilates and workout videos on YouTube and do them wherever the hell you want, because they're so convenient like that. I remember, I think it was the channel Move with Nicole, or was it Bailey Brown that was so popular during quarantine? It was something like that, but they're really good ones. But my personal favorite channel is Mad Fit. I love her videos. I do her 15-minute ab workout and then her 10-minute thigh and glute workout about every day. First of all, I do it all in sweatpants and a tank top, nothing special. Secondly, I get to switch it up where I do them. Like, I used to do them in my backyard and on my porch, at a park, in my room, the living room. And third best thing about it, it cost me zero extra dollars to do. It's perfect. My favorite time, though, to do them is in my living room. So I put the workout on my phone, and then I put my favorite show, The Office, on my big TV so I can work out and watch The Office at the same time. It's so fun, and sometimes that is my favorite part of the day. Listen, I just need to say again, I seriously think we get so intimidated when we even hear the word exercise, because once again, I see all the stuff that you see on social media. I see the Pilates princess stuff and how aesthetically pleasing it looks, but then you go to do it yourself and it's not like that at all. I see the $150 aloe workout sets that like 5% of people can actually afford, and all the fitness influencers at the gym. I'm actually scared to go to the gym. I feel like once I step foot in there, I'll have no idea what to do. But I will say, it's something that's on my list. I do want to start going to build some muscle, and I will push myself to do it. I guess I'll be keeping you updated on that journey. I'm just here to say, I get it. It's intimidating. When we think of exercising in this way, all it does is make it 10 times harder for us to actually get out of bed and to go do it, because we think it's out of reach and it has to be this whole thing. But exercise is for everybody. It's not about losing weight, trying to gain weight, trying to stay skinny. And the fact of the matter is, that is not the true nature of exercise at all. It's always been about your health. It's about determining the quality of life that you want to live. You deserve to feel good, proud, energized, happy, more relaxed, and exercise will give you all of that. Stay tuned to hear how I do in the gym, though. Hashtag scared. Let's move on to our next topic. The next necessity on the list, nutrition. We're gonna talk about food, the world's natural medicine. Did you know that they're now calling the gut the second brain? And that's because the food that we choose to eat, the food that is moving through your small intestine right now, I know, sorry, kinda yucky, but the food going through your small intestine right now determines the quality of fuel your brain is running on to function. You better hold on to something real quick because you just need to listen to this, okay? Your gut controls your mood more than your brain. 90% of your happy chemical is made in your gut. So your gut produces more serotonin than your brain does. In other words, when your gut is damaged, inflamed, or broken, happiness becomes more difficult to reach. How is this even possible, you ask? So there's this really cool nerve. I'm gonna call it the V nerve, but it's vagus nerve? Okay. Wait, I just looked it up. It's vagus nerve. So the V nerve, that is a direct hotline between gut and brain health. So happy gut, calm brain signals. Inflamed gut, oh my God, the stress alarm bells are like going crazy. There's a lot that can go wrong when it comes to giving our bodies the proper nutrients that it needs. For starters, some people might not eat enough. I know that's personally my terrible habit. And other people might not feed their brain proper nutrients. If this is the case, your brain will not have the tools that it needs to either get better or to do anything in a proper way. Your brain will have such a hard time coping with stress. It will not be able to recover from a mental disorder, focus on a task for long, come up with well thought out ideas. It is so important that we be mindful about what we choose to put into our bodies. But not only that, some of us need to actually start prioritizing meals. Like, breakfast is the most important meal of the day, yet it's the meal many of us don't prioritize. But me personally, my biggest struggle is I have a terrible habit of just not eating enough because my appetite is now just so used to not eating enough. And I am convinced it is behind why I don't feel right sometimes. Like a few days ago, I was working at my dad's office and I got terrible brain fog. I just could not think. And I was sitting there like, why is this happening? Why can't I think? And then I was like, you know what? I only ate two things today and it's like 6 p.m. now. No shit. My brain cannot physically function right now. After doing a lot of research, I cannot believe that America normalized sugary breakfast foods to be a thing. What the hell happened? Like, syrup on pancakes and waffles is nothing but straight sugar. Pop-Tarts, muffins, pancakes, waffles, French toast, basically all the cereal out there has so much sugar in them. Most of these things is basically all sugar. All this does is give you a quick spike of energy and then you quickly crash really hard after, making you feel tired, irritable, unfocused, and then it makes you crave even more sugar. Obviously, sugar makes us so freaking anxious, and that's not the only food that makes us super anxious. Foods that will make you anxious will be anything that raises and then quickly drops blood sugar. So low blood sugar can go with eating foods like bread, potatoes, rice, pasta, fruit juice, which is basically just sugar. Those are foods that can actually make you quite anxious. But let me tell you what I did that actually changed my life. I eat chicken for breakfast now. The days that I eat chicken, eggs, and a piece of fruit, oh my God, it's made me feel so much better. And then guess what I do? I have my coffee after I eat a big breakfast. So I'm speaking directly to my fellow girls when I say this. Coffee is not breakfast. that is messing you up so bad if you drank just a coffee for breakfast. Oh my God, it's like stressing me out even just thinking about it because I know exactly what that feels like firsthand because I used to put my body through hell my first 2 years of college. At Penn State, there's basically a Starbucks in our dining hall and you can use your meal plan money for it. So it's not like my actual money, it's just like my meal plan money. So every single morning without fail, I got myself an iced caramel macchiato before class and I would eat zero food with it because it filled me up. So every morning for breakfast, there I was with freaking sugar and espresso. For the first 30 minutes, I was super energized. I was fidgety. My heart would race and I would laugh at everything my friends would text me because that's just, I don't know, my body was so just fast-paced. And then after that 30 minutes, it was like all the life drained from my body. And I was this pale, miserable, ghost-like face. I had no energy. I was irritable. And I couldn't even eat anything with it because I didn't know at the time caffeine suppresses your appetite. So I wouldn't feel better until 1 p.m. when I had my first meal. 1 p.m. That's like half of my day ruined. My professor actually said something so funny. She was like, a lot of girls out there think they have anxiety, but it's just because of the coffees and energy drinks they have. Not gonna lie, I was there like, oh, okay, yep, that I'm guilty, okay. But even after all of this, after everything that I have said so far, you seriously still do not know how much of an impact food can really have on our well-being until you listen to this next story. I've thought about this story probably every single day since I heard it. It completely changed the relationship I have with food when it comes to allowing certain foods into my body. I mean, just wow. Like I said, these six necessities were all talked about in my class. So when we started talking about nutrition, one of my classmates raised her hand and shared this story. One day, out of nowhere, her older brother started struggling with serious psychotic episodes. She didn't go into much detail about the episodes, but they were so severe that he was in and out of mental hospitals for years, and it severely impacted his basic functioning abilities. Now, what was interesting was that before this, he was such a smart guy, but his disorder was so damaging that it reversed his mental capabilities. So he was around the age of like a senior in high school, but because his brain disorder was so damaging, he reversed back to a sixth grade mental level. And his younger sister, the student in my class who shared this story, said she was much younger than him, but was more mentally capable than her much older brother. This, I'm sure you can imagine, this was terrifying to the whole family. They thought he was going to be like this for the rest of his life because no medication, no treatment method was helping him at all. In fact, the psychotic episodes were just getting worse. But the family decided to do research of their own because they were desperate for anything that would help. And what they came across was research supporting that going on a carnivore diet would reduce his symptoms. So that's what he did. He went on a carnivore diet and he started getting better. He stopped having psychotic episodes and his brain caught back up to the rest of his body to the point that about a year or two later, he reached clinical remission. His symptoms completely went away and he is now off his medication. Going on a carnivore diet literally cured him from a brain disorder that seemed like could never be fixed. And I love this part. His sister described him as turning out even more intelligent than he ever was before his brain disorder even started. Here's something else just as interesting. Once again, in my class, my professor showed us a podcast clip. I don't know if you've seen or heard this one. It was a Harvard psychiatrist named Dr. Georgia Ede, who does a lot of research on keto diets. She is known for treating her clients with a keto diet instead of medication. And guess what? Her studies revealed that 43% of patients with bipolar disorder, major depressive disorder, and schizophrenia who participated in her study achieved clinical remission. Their symptoms completely went away while on the keto diet, and the rest of them, the 64% of them, left the experiment with a significantly lower dosage of medication than they originally entered it with. Going on a keto diet helped every single participant in this study at a significant rate. And now she's on podcast recommending that people go on a keto diet if they want to decrease the intensity of their symptoms, if not completely eliminate all symptoms. I'm just going to keep going because it gets even more interesting. There was another amazing study done on children who had ADD. And this study found that when you do an elimination diet of eliminating gluten, dairy, corn, soy, artificial dyes, and sweeteners, 70% of children completely lost their ADD. Like, oh my God, more than half, 70% of children. So after listening to all of these stories, I think we can all agree that food can be extremely powerful, but it can also be extremely harmful. And in the world we live in now, we need this reminder daily. Okay, so that is all I have to say about food. Let's move on to the next necessity now. We are going to talk about social support and relationships. So now, switching gears to relationships. Yay. Just you wait until you hear how powerful social support and relationships are for our health, for our physical health. When we talked about this one in class, I literally raced home to my roommates and made them all guess what my professor had us guess as well. This is what she had us guess. Out of the six necessities, exercise, nutrition, social support, sleep, the DMN, and religion, take a wild guess at which one is most crucial for our physical and mental well-being. Guess which one determines if you're going to live longer, if you will be physically healthier and happier? Guess. Immediately, we were like, exercise, duh. But professor said, nope. So then we go, nutrition? Nope. Sleep? Nope. The most important for our physical health is social support and our relationships. Yep, like me and everyone else in that class, we were like, explain this right now. When you feel supported, your body produces so much less cortisol, you have lower blood pressure, and it drastically reduces inflammation. All of these things, keeping your heart, immune system, and your brain very healthy. And when all of these things are healthy, your risk of diseases like heart disease, dementia, even cancer drastically goes down. So there is a literal correlation between the quality of your relationships to cancer. I mean, there are so many studies showing that people with strong support networks recover from surgery and illness much faster than those without. And In the longest-running study ever done on happiness, the Harvard Study of Adult Development, researchers found something very particular, actually. People with strong relationships reported less pain when they were in physical discomfort. Meanwhile, those with weaker or less satisfying relationships who were experiencing the exact same physical pain reported it as feeling worse because the emotional pain and discomfort of what they don't know was loneliness amplified their physical pain. I'm not making this up. This is literally in a Harvard study. Another super impressive and interesting thing about this study is that scientists also ruled out other factors like wealth, fame, and even genetics. None of them predicted good health and longevity as strongly as relationships did. Loneliness literally kills. Chronic loneliness and social isolation increases the risk of early death more than smoking. In other words, loneliness is worse for you than smoking. It speeds up your brain decline, damages the heart, weakens immunity, which means that the quality of your connections can quite literally add quality years to your life. Let me tell you what I personally gathered about this whole entire thing. Relationships are so precious. They literally determine the quality of your whole entire life. And ever since I came to terms with this, I had the most amazing desire to take such good, loving care of the people in my life. And I really needed to hear that because I feel like I took advantage of my relationships. I don't think we take as good care as we should to our close ones. For some of us, it's so easy to snap at our family members, to give attitude, to yell, call them rude names, to be petty with friends, treat them poorly, talk bad about them, start petty fights with your romantic partner. Because I see all that stuff on TikTok, you know, the jokes about asking your boyfriend a question about their past relationships just to start a fight with him. Yeah, I see all that stuff and I know we like to be petty. I'm not saying I never did it, because I'm not afraid to say I would do that every now and then in my past relationships, but it is not okay to do any of this anymore. Your relationships are way too valuable to be petty, to be unkind in, to yell, name call, or to show literally anything but love and support. We need to protect our relationships and tend to them with such kindness. If you don't prioritize your relationships, it's the quality of your life we are talking about here. I also hope that at this point too, you're starting to question a few people in your life who maybe don't serve you any love and any support. Those are the people you need to let go. If they're not giving you what you need, if you're surrounded by toxicity, if they're making you anxious, think poorly about yourself, you have to let these people go. It is your health we're talking about here. You cannot afford to be in a relationship or to have friends who don't make you feel anything other than loved and supported. And once again, it is our human nature to be in communities, to be in a group. We talked about it in class. Our ancestors' survival depended on other people. That's how we're programmed. You built homes together, hunted together. If there was a pack of wolves, you fought them off together. If someone had a problem in the tribe, it now became everyone's problem. They helped you through it and you were never alone. I'm sure you can imagine that is so different from the way our society works today. We're told to be completely independent, to do everything on our own, to measure success by how self-sufficient we are. But the truth is that being human has always meant being part of a community. Thankfully, communities aren't disappearing as much as you think. There's community everywhere you look, and in a lot of the places you and I go to, like a fitness studio or a gym, local hangout spots like a coffee shop, a bar, oh my god, a farmer's market, that would be so cute. There are so many classes you can take with communities of people just like you, like art classes, dance classes, oh my god, spiritual classes and retreats. You're gonna hear me talk about this later when I talk about religion, but I am very spiritual, and I've been taking Reiki lessons to become a Reiki master at a local Reiki space in my town where I'm around people just like me. There was actually a month over the summer where I was at that Reiki space every single week because I signed up for so many workshops. And I even said to my Reiki teacher, I was like, I love being here so much. And she said, these are your people. You belong here. When she said that, I just felt this huge sense of comfort and love. I barely know these people, but I am connected to you, and I don't feel alone when I'm here. Being in that space is so good for my soul. And there are so many other places where you can find that too. We're actually in a community right now. I created Why All Girls Need a Pink Disco Ball so I can unite women and people all around the world in feeling seen, supported, loved. I want to become my best self. I want you to become your best self. And I want to do that together. Keyword, together. I do also want to take the time to say that you are not meant to go through challenges and hardship alone. Never be afraid to ask for help. You cannot let challenges or hardship isolate you from your community. This is where you need them most. We need other people to bring us out of our own worlds, whether that's a therapist, a doctor, a priest, an organization. There are people all around the world that are here for you, that are accessible to you. I used to say to my friend all the time, because she would always be like, I'm scared that I'm not going to find anybody. I'm scared that I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life and that I don't have a soulmate. And I would look her dead in the eye and be like, what are you talking about? There are 8 billion people in this world. What do you mean you think there's no one out there for you? That's just not correct. But how it works is that she's not going to find her partner if she just stays home for the rest of her life. She has to put herself out there and actively go try. The same with you. No one is going to automatically come to you. You have to outreach to somebody. You have to make the effort and talk to somebody if you want to get better. For the people on the other side of that, I want to remind you that it is also our role to be there for the members of our community. That's part of our job. We have a job to spread understanding and compassion and offer our service and help to others who need it. Nobody is wired to be alone. All right, that is all that I have to say about social support and relationships. So now I gotta switch my mindset and change gears for a sec because we are gonna be talking about sleep. So I'm just gonna take a few seconds to just get in the mode of sleep. Okay, so just like exercise and proper nutrition, your brain is physically not able to cope, to manage your emotions, to recover, to think happy thoughts, if you're not getting proper sleep. It's not possible. So if you're taking bad sleep hygiene measures, that could very much well be a factor as to why you're depressed, extra anxious, irritable, have poor memory, slow to process things. Getting poor sleep can be so hard on the brain that over time, it is linked to depression, bipolar disorder, anxiety, and suicide ideation. I mean, children who get just one less hour of sleep are already at an increased risk of suicide ideation. To put that into perspective, 1 in 5 high school students reported having suicidal thoughts. I also know that sometimes I only got 6 hours of sleep when I was in high school because I spent way too much time scrolling on social media before bed, and I know I was not alone in that. Let me clarify what I mean when I say proper sleep. Getting proper sleep is no more and no less than 7 to 9 hours of sleep for adults and 8 to 10 hours of sleep for adolescents. And why I need to include no more than 9 or 10 hours is because I actually have a story about oversleeping that low-key traumatized me. Sometimes we love sleep a little too much that we let ourselves sleep past that 9 hours a night. But I will never forget when my freshman year psychology professor pulled up a chart in front of the freaking 300 student lecture hall where he compared the negative effects of undersleeping to the negative effects of oversleeping. And surprisingly, that was the moment I became terrified of oversleeping. So I have 300 people to back me up on this here. The same things that happen to us when we oversleep are the same things that happen to us when we undersleep. The more you oversleep, the more sluggish, tired, groggy, brain fog you will experience. And you are at a much higher risk of heart disease, stroke, and diabetes. It's basically super hard on your heart. And I actually read this really interesting article written by the director of a cardiovascular research institute named Dr. Arshed, who said that you are at a 50% increased risk of dying if you are sleeping too little or too much. Just like you, I mean, I was pretty much terrified because I used to think there was nothing wrong with oversleeping. In fact, I thought it was good. Like the nights that I would get 10 to 11 hours of sleep, I was like, oh, I really needed this. This is really good. But it is just as bad, if not worse. But it's not just about getting 7 to 9 hours of sleep. There's a little more that goes into it. We need to be taking good sleep hygiene measures so we can make the most out of those hours. We need to do those sleep hours the correct way, in other words. We all know the rules. Don't go on your phone or look at screens for about 30 minutes before falling asleep because it's messing up your sleep and you don't even know it. The light from screen lowers your melatonin, so that can make you sleep lighter and less restful. What I've recently been doing is I put my phone across my room before I fall asleep and I set my alarm beforehand. So one, I'm not exposed to screens before I go to bed. And two, when I wake up, I'm forced to actually get out of bed and turn off my alarm. It's great and it sucks at the same time, but whatever. Also, little reminder, we need to be watching when we drink caffeine and have our energy drinks because I know we like those. A few weeks ago, I drank a coffee around 4 p.m., wasn't thinking straight, but because of that night, not only did I have trouble falling asleep, but I think I woke up around 4 times in the middle of the night and had trouble falling back asleep. And it was that kind of sleep where, like, when you wake up, you feel like you haven't even been sleeping that whole time. Yeah, that sucked. And then I woke up groggy and irritable, and I just knew it was because I still had caffeine in my system. I gotta throw this out there. My professor mentioned this in class, which means I gotta mention it too. She noted the importance of natural sleep that is not being influenced by drugs or alcohol. Now, mind you, we were just a bunch of college kids when we heard this, so we were all like, oh, because I'm sure we had plans to go out and drink literally that very night. Like, we're consistently going to bed under the influence. So, yeah, we were a little concerned, but this is absolutely playing a huge role as to why so many college students deal with depression and anxiety and just don't feel right sometimes. Weed and alcohol specifically disrupt the REM stage of sleep, which is, I don't need to tell you this, one of the most vital stages of the whole sleep cycle. So when REM sleep is consistently disrupted, your emotions go all over the place. It explains the brain fog throughout the day, maybe even all the time. It's harder to think outside the box and problem solve. You got memory issues. But you don't gotta tell me. I understand that drinking is a big part of the college and high school experience. You know, some people don't want to give it up, but we have to learn how to manage our drinks when we go out. There's no reason why you need to be falling asleep under the influence. I mean, it's costing you your health and a healthy brain. You must pace. Let yourself slow down towards the end so you don't go to bed under the influence. I feel like someone out there needs to hear this. You don't need to black out to have fun. I promise you, it's not worth it to put your good health and good mindset on the line for, okay? And that concludes sleep. Once again, we're switching gears here and we're gonna talk about the fifth basic necessity, which is the default mode network, aka the DMN. As a reminder, the DMN is when we allow our mind to freely run and daydream without being distracted by things that take away our train of thought. It's different than thinking about a specific thing or trying to figure out a problem. The DMN is only activated when your mind is resting and not focused on anything specific. So it's the same as when you daydream, practice self-reflection, imagine the future, when you replay memories in your head. We all know how to activate it, but my professor used a really good example. She said, the next time you walk to class, don't go on your phone or even listen to anything on your phone. Just simply walk and daydream. Do you want to know what one of my first thoughts was when we started talking about this? I just couldn't help but say to myself, this feels a little too basic and too natural. Like, it's kind of reminding us to do something so simple like breathing or eating. Like, yeah, of course we let our brains rest and daydream. But realistically, it's sad this has to be a reminder for us to do because of the world we live in now. Because of technology and social media, not only are we distracted 24/7 to the point we seem to pull out our phone every time our brain isn't occupied on something, but also because of this. Our brains have to process so much more than we ever had to before. We process around 76 gigabytes every single day. And to compare that to your whole iPhone, that holds 64 gigabytes. And every year, the amount of gigabytes that our brain has to process just keeps on going up by 5%. So while we're processing all this extra information, we're also never allowing ourselves proper time to process and time to think or reflect on it all. Like, anytime we have an awkward pause or extra time, we don't sit there and think anymore. We just pull out our phones to distract ourselves. I'm guilty of it, you're guilty of it, and it's so dangerous because we're denying our brain a chance to rest. That's all that the DMN is, a chance to let your brain rest. So when we don't do that, of course we're going to feel disconnected from ourselves. We get emotionally unbalanced, feel super anxious. Our brains are, to put it in simple terms, messy and chaotic. We got so much going on up there and we don't take the time to properly put it away. Like, Imagine if your brain was like a super messy room where you keep throwing new things on the floor and you don't put anything away or clean it out. You just let stuff stack and stack up. Oh, here, let me throw this in my room and this and this and this. And you just keep on going to the point your room is now overflowing. Oh my God. And you don't know what is where. Everything is all over the place. And now you're left feeling so overwhelmed. And that is what exactly happens when you don't engage in the DMN every day. Doesn't it just sound so much more calm and pleasing when you properly put it all away and clean it up so you're left with a nice, clean, aesthetically pleasing room? Yeah, that sounds so much better. You know, engaging in the DMN is actually crucial for me to make these podcast episodes. I didn't even realize it, but a huge part of writing each script is allowing myself time to think outside of when I'm sitting at my desk writing the script. Like, behind every episode, there are so many hours where I just sit and let my brain roam because this is how I come up with my best ideas and thoughts. It happens in the car, in the shower, when I'm sitting on my porch eating a sandwich and staring at the trees. If I only wrote my scripts and did all my work sitting at a desk locked into the same train of thought the whole time, I think the script would be so terrible and make no sense. I have a question for you. I want to ask you, have you ever had a period of rest where you come back to your bed after a really long day, or you have a break at work, or you're sitting in the car after an appointment and you're like, yes, thank God that's over. I get a break. Let me relax. Let me get out my phone and finally relax. So you pull up TikTok or Instagram and you decide, okay, I'm gonna scroll until I feel rejuvenated enough to get back to what I was doing before. So you're sitting there relaxing on TikTok and 10 minutes go by, 20 minutes go by, we're now pushing 30 and you're still car sitting or in bed because you don't feel relaxed or ready enough to get back to what you were doing. Until then, at the very last minute, you're like, oh my God, I really need to get back now. Or to the point you turn off your phone in complete disgust, because that's happened to me where, oh my God, do not judge. There have been moments where 3 hours will go by and I am still in bed and I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. The reason why myself and you have never felt relaxed enough or ready to get back to what you were doing was because scrolling on social media does the exact opposite of relaxing you. It is overstimulating your brain instead. Scrolling before bed while taking a break at work, that is not winding you down. That is winding up your brain. That's how you become overstimulated. That's how you become anxious. That's how you get emotionally unstable. It actually just happened to my sister, and I wanted to say something so bad, but you know, little sisters, I don't want to annoy the crap out of them. So she got back from a really long drive from Philadelphia, and I came up to her room to hang out and to talk to her. And she was like, sorry, I don't have any energy right now. I'm really tired. Can we hang out when I have energy again? But she was on her freaking phone scrolling on TikTok. And she was so not in the mood to have me be like, actually, that is overstimulating you. You're not going to relax from that. So I'm just like, okay, all right, I'll come back later. So I go up about an hour later and she's still in bed on TikTok and she was even more miserable. This is why the default mode network is a necessity for stable mental health, because this is how you actually relax and let your brain just pause. If you took a walk or took a drive, if you sat on your porch or looked out a window and just let your brain chill, I guarantee 10 or 15 minutes would go by and you would feel more calm, more energized, more focused, more in tune with yourself. You would actually feel ready to get back to work. We have chances every day to engage in the DMN. Sometimes we just miss them. When you're doing laundry or washing the dishes, don't watch TV in the back. Same goes for when you're eating. Don't scroll on TikTok or watch YouTube. Don't listen to music in the shower once in a while. All of these things just don't do once in a while, because these are perfect times to let your brain just roam and truly relax. All right, guys, we are really coming to an end. I'm so proud if anybody has actually stayed to listen to the rest of this. So the very last thing that we have to talk about is religion and spirituality. Not gonna lie, I was very shocked seeing this one written on the board. I just was not expecting to see a doctor in psychology write this up on the board under necessities for stable mental health. But once professors started talking about it, I mean, it makes total sense. It is really hard on your brain if you don't believe in a God or in a bigger picture. In fact, you're twice more likely to be depressed if you don't believe in a God. We as human beings need daily reminders that there's something bigger than us and something bigger than the struggles and pain we deal with in our lives. So whether it's God, the universe, a set of principles that you follow, we need a source that big to pull us outside of things like money, social norms, breakups, rejection, toxicity, even death. Sometimes no medication or therapist could bring us the amount of peace that your faith can. In fact, my mindset about religion and spirituality have completely changed over the years, and it's a big part of who I am today. So I really want to talk about it. I was raised in a Catholic school all my life, but during quarantine, when I was around a sophomore in high school, I went through this huge spiritual awakening. I don't know, it was so odd because I just got so overwhelmed by this one thought: nothing matters in this world. And I just kept telling myself, oh my God, the earth is gonna end one day and all of our progress won't matter at all. It doesn't matter if I fail a test or if someone doesn't like me, because we all won't even be here one day. I remember telling my mom all this and she looked at me like, what is wrong with you? That was actually such a weird time. You know what? Looking back, it was probably just quarantine. Quarantine drove me nuts. That is what it was. Moral of the story, that mindset made me question everything that I've learned until that point. I don't even know how, but I started gravitating more towards energy and spirituality, the universe, you know, natural healing remedies like Reiki. And that's just what works for me and what still works for me. My spiritual side is a huge part of me. And if you're friends with me, you know this. I say some pretty crazy things. I seriously do. But, you know, it's what makes me happy and it makes me feel calm. And like I mentioned earlier, I was studying to be a Reiki master. I'm actually a right now level 2 Reiki master. That's what I've been working on this summer. If you don't know what Reiki is, it's basically by using the energy in your hands to balance out the energy in someone else's body. Because, well, we are a human energy field according to science, and everything is energy. We can radiate good or bad energy depending on our thoughts and our actions. So we can use energy to balance out the dampened energy that gets stuck in someone else's body from trauma, chronic stress, self-doubt, anger, resentment, because it actually goes hand in hand with psychology. Because yeah, all that stuff gets stored in the body if it's not healed, and it leads to many physical problems like disease, even cancer. So what Reiki does is it just balances out that dampened energy so someone can heal. And that's me. That's me, man. That is what I believe in. And what's really funny is that when I first moved into college my freshman year, One of my really good friends was extremely Catholic. I'm sure we all know where this was going. So we would just playfully fight about our beliefs. You know, we would just bicker and debate back and forth, call each other's beliefs dumb and stupid. Obviously, looking back, there was such a better way of going about that. Like, what the heck was that? We tried to change each other's opinions. Clearly, that didn't work. But this is how much my mindset has changed about religion and spirituality. If you were to tell me that now, if she tried to fight with me about that today, I truly would be nothing but happy for her. I don't care what you believe in anymore. As long as it makes you happy, it makes you a better person, you're not judging anyone, it keeps you from falling into a darker headspace, that is all that matters. That is one of the whole entire points of religion. That's all the things that my spirituality does for me. I don't know what I would do without that part of myself because I have so much faith that if I'm kind and lead with good intentions, everything will work out for me. Because I am kind, I attract kindness. Because I am love, I attract love. I am so divinely protected that I don't worry about myself if someone does me wrong. I worry about the other person. This is what I believe, and it doesn't have to make sense to anyone because all that matters is that it makes me feel better. Everybody deserves to feel this type of safety and comfort. And while I'm not here to tell you to, you know, to go to church, I am kind of speaking to the people who maybe don't believe in anything, because I want to just say, why not experiment a bit? You know, it won't hurt. You could say a prayer or ask for a sign from the universe or from God. Maybe you should attend a mass, just see what happens. I hear this a lot. I hear, you know, your science brain is preventing you from believing in anything. But if that's the case, I want to remind you that the core of science is being skeptical. In order for science to exist, you need to question and experiment. You need to believe in something more because certainly this isn't all there is, or else science and experiment would come to an end. I truly believe that you didn't stumble upon this podcast for no reason at all, especially if you made it this far until the very end. There's no way that's not a sign from God or from the universe. I truly encourage anybody to either experiment a bit or to either get back in tune with whatever principles you want that will make you feel so much comfort and safety. It is so important for your health. Guys, that is all I have to say about religion. We have made it to the very end of this episode, and I know this was a super long one, way more long than usual. So if you made it this far, thank you for spending this time with me. We're like officially best freaking friends now. And please make sure to thank yourself. You did this amazing thing for yourself, and that does not go unnoticed, okay? But hang on just a second. As a reminder, the six basic necessities that we talked about today for strong mental health are exercise, nutrition, social support and relationships, sleep, engaging in the DMN, and religion or spirituality. But do not be intimidated by this long list. Let's not forget that you can do some of these things at the same time, like going on a walk with a friend, boom, exercise and social support right there. You can go on a walk and daydream. That's exercise and the DMN. You can cook a healthy meal while daydreaming. That's nutrition and the DMN. Oh my God, I love this one. You can make up scenarios in your head before going to sleep. I love doing that. I love to be delusional, and I know you do too. Yay. So that's engaging in the DMN and taking good sleep hygiene measures. Point is, don't be intimidated. There are so many ways to make all of these things work. Now, I'm going to leave by saying that my part here is finished. I told you all the information that you need to hear. Now the ball is in your court. It is time to live these things now. Your choices determine what your life can look like. So make sure they're good choices. And for the record, you will never regret prioritizing these things. Like, have you ever regretted moving your body and exercising? Have you ever regretted eating a really healthy meal that makes you feel good? No, you just gotta get in the habit of making those choices, and then the rest will fall into place. But no pressure, you can start out slow, just like me. That's what I'm doing. But soon, we are becoming our best selves. It is happening. I just know it. Hey, thank you again for listening. You guys are my best friends. And because you're my best friends, you gotta follow my TikTok. It's Pink Disco Ball Pod. And my Instagram, Why All Girls Need a Pink Disco Ball. I post more psychology related stuff for you there that'll just make you feel good. So, you know, do your thing. It's corny, I know, but I love you guys. And until next time. Oh, but one more thing. I am not a licensed psychologist or mental health professional. This podcast is meant to share research, insights, and personal experiences, and it should never replace professional advice. You hear me on that? If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health, I strongly encourage reaching out to a licensed therapist, counselor, or other qualified mental health professional. All right, for real now, until next time, bye.